Our fourth speaker today is Dr. Paul Collins, who I'm proud to say is one of the patrons of Sustainable Population Australia. He has to make it up to almost to the top of my list of my favourite Catholics, actually. He is a former priest, was for 33 years, until he had a dispute with the Vatican, and I say all power to you, brother. I think the Vatican's still in control, but it was a good fight. Anyway, he's also a writer and a broadcaster. Occasionally you might hear him, particularly on ABC, talking about religious issues. He is also a historian and a writer, his most recent book being published in 2013. So, Paul, will you come to the stage, please?
Thanks very much, Sandra. Actually, if you look at breakfast on Channel 7, you might meet me there as well, because Koshy and I are like that. We're mates. Koshy and I are mates. Now, some of you are not laughing because you don't know who Koshy is. And that's a loss in your life, let me tell you. Now, look, what I... George Browning leant over to me. I'm sorry, George, to pinch this from you. But George leant... yes. George leant over to me in the middle of all the scientists talking, and he said, "I think they're terrified of us." That's us theologians, so to speak. Well, I'm not that. I'm terrified of scientists, and I'm actually terrified of the amount of knowledge there is sitting in this room on the very topics that I want to talk about. But what I want to do today, and look, my speech is very simple. Very, very, very simple. I just want to take you back to Ethics 101 and then show that Ethics 101 is wrong. Ethics 101 is that the sole purpose of the entire world, I hesitate to say cosmos, but I have heard people say that, after all, we could establish a colony on the moon if we have made Earth uninhabitable. So the Ethics 101 at the present moment, as people see it, is that the sole purpose of the entire creation is for the good of humankind. We are the meaning, the summit, the absolute ecstasy of the world. Now, as I said, that's Ethics 101 as we presuppose it. The German philosopher Martin Heidegger, who, when you can work out what he's actually saying, actually says a number of extremely interesting things, and as Germans sometimes do, he has words to summarise what he's trying to say. And he uses this word Gestell, which essentially means frame of reference. And he says that we are dominated by an unconscious Gestell, an unconscious frame of reference. And the frame of reference that the vast majority of humankind have is that the world exists for us. The simple thing that I want to say is that if it was ever viable, is no longer viable. Sure, as human beings, we're anthropocentric. Dogs are dog-centric. Cats are cat-centric. Well, kind of. Any species is species-centric. But we have developed, in the course of evolution, the ability to reflect upon ourselves. We have self-consciousness. So therefore, it is possible for us to, again, to use a word of Heidegger, to poetize, he says, by which he means to imagine an alternative. And that is the kind of, I think, place that we're at the present moment. If Ethics 101, the world exists for us, was acceptable in the past, it no longer is because, as the three scientists who preceded me have shown, the world is not in the same place. We are in an absolutely, unequivocally unique situation in world history, and we have to take decisions that are absolutely unique, and they are going to be extraordinarily demanding. My new Ethics 101 is that the good of the natural world, the nurture, the salvation, the support, any word you want to find to use, that the good of the natural world comes first. Everything else in my new Ethics 101 is subsumed to that. That's why I could have... No, I've never been tempted to kiss John Coulter. But I was tempted to when he put up the Tony Abbott quote. That's a seminarian, an ex-seminarian who never did ethics anything, because truthfully, how I've kind of come to this, you see, is I've seen two lots of people being tortured by the environmental crisis. I've watched climate scientists desperate because they know what's happening. They're desperate to tell us what the problem is, but everyone ignores them. The reason why, of course, is the buggers put on endless seminars on it, as though anyone was converted by intelligence, by rational argument. Someone had another one of those wonderful three scientists who presented had a wonderful quote there about how we really make decisions. It was Bob, I think, that had it. But it was, whatever it was, whoever it was a beautiful... I'd love to get the quote. I can't even recall exactly what the words were. But it was about decision-making, and we're not influenced by rational argument. We're influenced in the end by emotion. Those of us trained as preachers know that. Preaching is not about emotional... It's not about rational argumentation. It's about persuading people to convert. And that's what I'm aiming to do with you all this afternoon, to convert you to the new Ethics 101, to convert to the notion that the fundamental principle that we must begin to proclaim is that the world comes before everything else. The conservation, the nurturance, the care of the natural world is fundamental. That's the reason, and this comes to my second group of tortured people besides climate scientists, are all of the church leaders who understand that there is a serious environmental problem. Frankie the Argentinian in Rome, he knows that there is an environmental problem. Even his benighted German predecessor understood that there was an environmental problem. I covered World Youth Day for SBS Radio. They wouldn't let me on telly. I saw George Pell, climate denier, sitting all the way through Benedict XVI, acknowledging that there was a climate crisis. One of the great leaders, certainly in Eastern Europe, is the Eastern Orthodox Patriarch Bartholomew I, who's known as the Green Patriarch. He's done an enormous amount of work on the lower reaches of the Danube River. Many Catholic bishops' conferences, the Anglican Church, the Uniting Church, all the mainstream churches, and interestingly, increasingly, many evangelical churches and even fundamentalist churches are starting to see what the problem is. That's environmentally. But they are stymied, and this comes back to Ethics 101, they are stymied by the fact that they can't get beyond the primacy of the human. They can't get beyond that. And that is, within Catholicism at the present moment, among progressive Catholics here in Australia and among my colleagues, this is the kind of very conflictual situation that emerges between people like myself and even my former student at school, Frank Brennan, Andrew Hamilton, the Jesuit, Bill Dean, who's already been mentioned, that they can't grasp the population problem because of their deep and profound sympathy for the reality of the situation that so many people in the world find themselves who wish to want to come to Australia. But you see, we do have to. We're not in business as usual in this world. We are at a turning point. That's what our scientists are telling us. We are at a turning point. And the morals of the past, the ethics of the past, do not work any longer. That's why we have got to have the courage to make decisions about where we place our priorities. I told you this is the most boring, simple speech you've ever heard. There's only one point. There's only one point. I sat down at Parliament House, it was last year or the year before. Bob Brown had invited me because he didn't think there were enough Greens going to it. I haven't paid my membership of the Greens lately for various reasons, which I won't go into here, but disputes with policy stances, or the Greens' failure to have a population policy. That's my problem. But anyway, Bob's a good mate, and I have a great regard for him. The Dalai Lama was speaking, you see. So, Collins... Bob introduced me as one of Australia's great religious leaders to the Dalai Lama. I thought, you beauty, Bob. Anyway, the Dalai Lama gave a very interesting, if slightly conventional, speech. And then was question time came, you see. The very sitting right where Sandra Nack is sitting now, right in the front row, in line of sight for the key speaker, was Bronwyn Bishop. No doubt in training for the speaker's job. And Bronwyn jumped to her feet. Very first question. She said to the Dalai Lama, "What is the take-home message?" And the Dalai Lama looked at her and he talked to the monk sitting beside him and he said, in Tibetan, went on for about 3 minutes and the this conversation went on and we all sat there, all those who had Tibetan as a second language and the Dalai Lama smiled and he looked at Bronwyn and he said, "Compassion." Now my take-home message is Ethics 101, just remember that, and the change. What I want to also say is that if there is a task that those of us who are concerned, one, about population, two, about immigration into Australia, three, about the environment, we have got to bring people around to a different way of thinking. Earlier I used the word conversion, and I actually believe in a kind of evangelical sense, those of you who are here who are concerned about the environment have undergone a conversion. Now it wasn't that you jumped up at the revivalist meeting, although some environmental meetings are like revivalist meetings, preaching to the converted, just as I might be doing this afternoon. There is a real sense in which we have got to be able to get people's judgment to shift. We've got to create a new Gestell for them, in Heidegger's terms, a new enframing of morals. And when I think we start to do that, then I think we can start to look at some of the evidence that is around just at the present moment on the question of immigration to Australia, and that is the moral question that we've been asked to look at this afternoon. There is a very interesting organisation called, it's a UK-based organisation, many of you I'm sure have heard of it, it's the Optimum Population Trust. Is it? Pop, thank you. Yes. It's like SPA, it keeps changing its name. The Population Matters Trust has... No, honestly, she's like a schoolmarm. Last time I spoke, she rang a bell. They've calculated, whatever it's called, they've calculated the actual population figures that a country could carry with a modest footprint carrying capacity. And you ask, what is a modest footprint carrying capacity? It defines this as a lifestyle broadly related to European standards of living, with a reduction of about 3/5 of present consumption of fossil fuels. Now, as we saw, fossil fuels are, you know, impregnate our lives far more pervasively than we are aware. So that is actually a relatively serious shift of downsizing. Now, in this scenario, it's interesting that a couple of countries, Canada and New Zealand, for instance, actually could carry slightly larger populations. But when you have a look at some other countries, some very interesting figures come up. For instance, Population Matters' own country, the United Kingdom, has an actual population of 60 million. Its carrying capacity, according to that norm, is 23 million. When you look at Israel, I'm just picking countries at random here, its actual population is 6 million, its carrying capacity is 1 million. Egypt, having trouble just at the present moment, 67 million actual population, carrying capacity, the Nile Delta, 6 million. So we're talking, you know, figures that are beyond imagination. And if we're imagining that, those populations are not having an impact on the natural world, well, we live in cloud cuckoo land. But the country we're actually talking about is Australia. Actual population, a bit over 22, what is it, 22.5? 23, is it? Well, it was 22 when I wrote this book 2 years ago. It's now 23, that's interesting. Actual carrying capacity, 18 million. Now, when I say we've got to start to enframe things differently, we've got to start to enframe things within a context somewhat like that. We've got to ask ourselves, what can this continent carry? Of course, we're feeding, 60 million or more, because we're a big net exporter of food. Two-thirds of or more of the land surface of New South Wales already degraded. So we're already, in a way, in cloud cuckoo land. But if we're going to turn it around, we've got to be able to persuade people to see things from a different perspective. We've got to be able to persuade people that there is a much broader enframing of our problems that's needed. And we've got to be able to persuade them that we're in a situation now where we can't avoid that. And that's why, short of kissing John Coulter, that's why I thought that quote, I was cheering, because the quote tells you everything. The quote tells you that government after government, and it's not just the Liberals, Labor supporters, you should hang your heads in shame as well. And so should Greens, because we have not been game to tackle these things. The Democrats, in John's time, actually came closest to it. But now it's as though life can just go on with business as usual. We've got to get people who can articulate these kind of views. We've got to get them into the media. And look, people say, oh, we can't do this, we can't do that in the media. I have spent the last 30 years in the media talking about theology. Now, theology is not easy to talk about. How can you talk about what you don't know? How can you talk? Theology is poetry. Religion is poetry. Tom Berry, my mentor from the United States, Tom says, religion is poetry or it is nothing. What we have got to be able to do is to be able to talk in these very straightforward, simple ways to say to people, you have to change the way that you look at things. And it's only when we begin to do that that we will undercut the endless discussions about immigration, which are so often cast in economic terms rather than ethical terms, undercut that in order to get people to actually seriously think about the country's carrying capacity, the way in which we frame the question about migration to Australia, and the way in which we use the wealth that we in fact do have in our commonwealth to support people to remain within their own countries, and especially to support professional people to remain in their own countries, because they're the people that their countries need. I mean, the way we go around picking off the brightest and the best and bringing them here and using them for our own purposes, I just see that as totally exploitative. Now, as the Dalai Lama said, compassion, that's the take-home message. Just rethinking is our take-home message here, and I'm going home. They're gobsmacked. They're gobsmacked. So, essentially, ordinary people are already converted to the new ethics. The problem is the dominant forces within the media who really do, in fact, as you say, exactly, dominate our public discourse. And they dominate it also in the ABC. I mean, I'm sure Jenny and anyone in Spire will tell you. And I see it. Most ABC news journalists, and many of these are my friends and former colleagues, most of them are slightly left of centre in their political and social leanings, or probably in social leanings they're more left of centre. But in fact, they are still dominated by the neo-rationalist economic agenda. And they cannot get beyond that. They're absolutely trapped in that neo-rationalist agenda. The only way I have discovered of, in a way, undermining that is making fun of it and telling them for what it is. It is a pseudo-religion because it's dogmatic. It works from dogmas, and the dogmas have to apply to every situation. So I do think we've got to to tackle those. Again, it's an enframing of reality. Heidegger has his essay on technology. He discusses at great length the way in which we enframe the world, and we enframe it by technology. Increasingly, we see the world through technological lens, but we also enframe it as through that economic model that is so dominant. It's difficult to tackle that. One of the things where I think that the people who are very much within the social justice context and environmental people need to work together is to tackle that model. What is very interesting in Pope Francis, first in new his encyclical Evangelii Gaudium, he absolutely goes straight after the neo-rationalist crowd. He doesn't hesitate there. He in fact wrote to the big gathering at Davos where Tony Abbott gave the talk on Economics 101 to all the world leading economists. I think that we've got to start to undermine that. Humour is part of undermining, but also we've also got to look for our allies and friends in doing this. And this is one area where I think religion and scientists need to work together. I've already done it, Brian. No. I go through the in this book Judgment Day, which is one of it came out in 2011. I discuss that what does the Bible have to contribute to the environmental discussion? And you're quite right. That is an extraordinarily tragic text. It's written within a quite specific context, the context of people who are in a desert environment trying to eke an existence out of the soil. We're talking about the Israelites in the so-called Promised Land. It wasn't all that good. And there is a kind of an antagonism there, you're absolutely right. But you see, we can't allow just one text to dominate. You can find many other texts throughout both the Hebrew and the Christian scriptures which are far more positive than that about the environment. So that's what George and I'd be doing together, although there may be some conflict. But
that's in the anyway, as a scientist.
No, you probably don't, because we have, again, it's a difference in. But I mean, as Flannery, but if I can say, I'm always hesitant to say this because it sounds like something blasphemous, but I don't necessarily think that Aborigines were always and at every time paragons of environmental virtue. They're human beings, for goodness sake. They've got hands, and so they fiddled with the environment because they actually had to. And as Flannery points out, their initial impact was very considerable, just as E.O. Wilson's book, it's not a book on New Zealand, but he talks about the Maoris in New Zealand. Human beings have an impact. Our numbers have an impact. So I don't idealise Aborigines, as does my good friend Bill Gammage necessarily. Bill and I have quite a serious disagreement on the issue of fire, and Bill, I have to tell you, is a damn sight better historian than I am and knows a lot more about it, but we still disagree. However, look, one of the things that scientists, I don't think, realise is you've got more support from the religious communities than you think. The vast majority of the mainstream churches are good on the environment, but they're bad on population, and they have not yet made the connection between population and environmental impacts. That's where the problem is. Now, some of us have been talking, me for 30 years, about the impact of population within the context of the churches. It's still a difficult message to get through, I have to admit.
Okay, will you please thank Paul Collins?